And we are now live.
Okay, welcome all to this LTD ATU Pension Trust meeting. I'll call the meeting to order and we'll start with a roll call of trustees. Bill Bradley, aye. In attendance, John Hampton.
Aye.
Christina Hsu.
Here.
Aurora Jackson.
I am here.
And Mr. John Hunt is no longer a trustee, and it looks like we have a vacant board member spot. So that two and two, that's enough for a quorum. We have staff here. I'll start with the meeting preliminary remarks. It's good to see everybody. It's sad that we're still continuing this on Zoom. I know we had optimistic that we'd see everybody in person this time around, but you know, we got to roll with the punches these days, and at least we can still get the good business done at the trust for everyone that's affected by it. It's kind of unusual now that we're doing over Zoom in this this kind of format that we do allow audience participation. So I don't have any further remarks, so I guess I'll ask Camille if there's anybody in the audience that wants to participate. And if they do, we can read the instructions.
Yes, I do show one person indicating they would like to speak. Would you like to read through the instructions or would you prefer that I do?
Yeah, why don't you handle that one, Camille?
Sure, absolutely. So I'm just going to read the instructions on how to provide public testimony for any of you who are not aware. To indicate you would like to provide testimony, please use the raise your hand button. For those attending via phone only, press star 9 on your phone to raise your hand. When it is your time to speak, your name will be called. For those attending via phone only, the last 4 digits of your phone number will be called. Please state your name, city of residence, and who you are representing for the audio record. Once you have provided testimony, your hand will be lowered. Please do not raise your hand again. Only one opportunity to speak is being provided. For those unable or not wanting to speak publicly, testimony may also be provided via email at clerk@ltd.org. And I have Carol James wishing to provide testimony. Give me just one moment to get the timer up here and share my screen. Carol, go right ahead when you're ready.
Okay, my name is Carol James. I'm from Springfield, Oregon. I'm a past LTD employee. And I want to say two things. I actually want to talk on the public speaker on the admin meeting, but was unable to last time because apparently I wasn't recognized. I just want to make sure that everybody knows that I'm here and ready to go. I would also like to comment that the agenda, I think, says 10 o'clock for the start of this meeting, and you're starting at 9. And the agenda for the admin meeting says 12. And I do not think it appropriate to be doing these meetings if you're not starting at the time that you're supposed to, that it says on the agenda that you're starting. Anyway, I just want everybody to know that I'm here, and I would like to speak at the admin meeting whenever it begins, and that's all I have to say.
Thank you, Carol. Noted on the agenda typo. I do think it was advertised as a 9 a.m. start on the website and in our communications. We can get that corrected, though. Okay. We have approval of minutes. Did everybody have a chance to go through the minutes from last meeting? And if you did, and if you had any corrections, please bring those forward. If not, I'll entertain a motion to approve the minutes.
Approve minutes as written.
Motion made by John Hampton.
I'll second.
Second by Christina Hsu. Any discussion on that? Seeing none. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Passes unanimously. So that business is done. We'll move on to our report of the investment consultant, Mr. Ian Bray. You are up, and we are eager to hear from you. You are muted, or you're not coming through. Not a thing.
Anything yet?
Oh, that sounds a lot better, Ian.
Sometimes on these Zoom meetings, it defaults to the wrong microphone for some reason. I apologize, but all these platforms are different, and it takes me a couple minutes to figure out where the right buttons are. So glad everybody can hear me. I apologize for that. I'm going to share my screen real quick for my portion of the meeting, and we will talk through capital markets and performance, which I'm very happy to talk you all through. It looks like a continuation of a really great run we've been having, particularly this year. Before I start, I'll give a quick capital markets update. Please interrupt me with any great questions that you all have with respect to anything going on in the markets or the economy. I will answer them to the best of my abilities. On your screen right now, page 4, quick capital markets review, succinct in one page. You know, as you well know, we've got a few pages, about 10 pages after that, that kind of go into a little deeper dive into specific asset classes and so forth. But I think this does a pretty good job of kind of summarizing what we saw in Q2. I can speak to a little bit what markets have been doing since the print of these figures in the third quarter so far, but really, you know, Q2, I probably sound like a little bit of a broken record here. It'll probably change for next quarter from what we've been seeing in the markets in Q3 so far, but Q2 was a really good quarter across most assets, particularly what we deem as risk assets, so particularly equities, if you will, but we saw bonds actually have a bit of a comeback as well, and we'll speak through why that was. But essentially, you know, with the continuing of the reopening of economies, not just here in the US, but globally as well, that has been a nice tailwind for markets. In that bottom left-hand box, you can see some of the performance for different market segments through Q2. S&P 500 up about 8.5%, small caps up about half that, represented by the Russell 2000. Those next couple down, the next three are international markets, developed, represented by EFA, and emerging markets down there. So everything was up relatively in equity land, public equity land, somewhere between 4 and 10%, depending on the style, the cap size, et cetera. But really that built on to a strong first quarter, leading us with year-to-date returns in the equity markets somewhere between 7 and 15%. But really what that's kind of leading us with, and if you look at those trailing one-year returns from an index perspective, is some pretty eye-popping numbers still at like 40 to 60%, depending on the style. We saw a kind of slight differentiator in rotation. So what led the recovery, if you think back to April of last year, was really led by kind of those mega cap stocks, particularly tech stocks. We saw that actually rotate into small cap value stocks, leading the charge toward the end of last year into the early parts of this year. We've again seen a rotation back toward large cap growth stocks kind of leading the way. So every segment of the market, if you will, has kind of had its turn in the past year and a half or so since we saw that initial sell-off in March of 2020. With respect to kind of leading the charge in terms of equities, there's a lot of factors that go into that. You know, yields and what the Fed has been doing has certainly been a part of that. and conducive to different rotations, depending on when yields were doing different things. If you look at that treasury yield curve on the right, you'll see front end still very pinned at zero. You know, we've got the federal funds rate or cash, if you will, essentially still earning you absolutely nothing. But you saw there some decent movement in the yield curve represented by the differential between that blue and that green line. So you saw yields move down a little bit there on the back end of the curve. They moved down significantly more actually since Q3. So I think as of this morning, you know, the 10-year was sitting at the end of the quarter, somewhere right around 150 basis points, and we're a lot closer to 115, 120 basis points as of this morning. So yields have moved down considerably. You know, what's part of that process, or what drives yields down over the past few months? Well, one, we've seen some continuing inflation concerns. You've probably all seen some of the consumer price index or CPI prints coming in very heavy, you know, in the 5% range, which we haven't seen in over a decade. A lot of that discussion is, you know, centered around, is this a kind of a more transitory effect or a structural one? Is it going to stick around for a while? At the beginning of when we first started seeing these inflation numbers, I think a lot of market participants were more fearful that it could potentially be something that was here for a while. And by I mean high inflation, I mean exceedingly or drastically exceeding the Fed's stated target of about 2% inflation. So 5%, obviously way overshooting that. You know, a lot of that has some transitory effects, used car prices, oil, things of that nature, some supply and demand imbalances. You've all probably somewhere in your life ran into problems with or heard of problems with respect to getting materials from overseas, and that causing supply chain disruptions. So that has some effect on the price of goods. And that certainly was contributing to some of those high CPI numbers. But you know, that being said, we are in a kind of section right now of the recovery where inflation is running over the Fed's stated target. And that's something that they will need to balance going forward. So it's something that the Fed has obviously been discussing more if you read their minutes. And it's something where it is likely not going to drive any short-term Fed movements as long as inflation kind of subdues a little bit or comes back down. But that is also, you know, teeming with their ability to kind of make sure that we continue to grow as an economy and not suppressing that too much by raising interest rates too quickly. So most of their meeting minutes state that they're probably not going to lift off of zero until 2023. I think unless we get some really hot inflation and or really hot growth that well exceeds their expectations, we're likely not to see any federal funds in interest rates until 2023. And what does that mean? Though that just means more liquidity for the U.S. economy in terms of lower borrowing costs and hopefully still some runway for this recovery to take flight on. You know, but if it gets going too hot, you might see some more discussion in the minutes in terms of potentially lifting that front end off. Outside of that, you know, really it has been post Q2, so post these numbers that you're looking at, certainly more a little bit more of a rocky market. We've been seeing some more trading days kind of in the plus or minus 1% range, where for a while there we were seeing some pretty subdued numbers, but generally positive. So a lot of things have obviously been contributing to that. Delta variant scares, obviously probably the biggest headline there in terms of what economies are going to do with respect to staying open or moving backwards, particularly in some other parts of the country. We've obviously got some conflict going on in the world right now in terms of different things that are happening in Afghanistan and things in the European nation. And then obviously that inflation discussion is going to be one that's probably going to stick around for a little while in terms of what the Fed's going to do and the market's going to react to that. So as of Q2, numbers we're going to look at really didn't reflect too much negative news. But next quarter, when we look at the same report, I would assume that our quarter-to-date numbers are not going to be quite this eye-popping. Equity markets are generally up about 2% right now for the quarter. Bonds are a bit up, pending or per my comments on the yield curve moving back down. So I would assume Q3 numbers, if they were going to end today, we're going to look more in the 1-2% range as opposed to some of these really big numbers that we've been seeing for the past year and a half. So economy and the recovery is certainly slowing down a bit, but we'll take some of these trailing one-year numbers that we've seen so far. Any questions from the committee on any of the numbers here or anything with respect to market activity? Okay, we'll get right into some of the good news here. Page 12 here shows us where the portfolio sits at the end of Q3. If you will recall, at the previous meeting, we approved some slight shifts in the asset allocation. And so those are the new targets that are reflected on the upper right-hand corner here, that target allocation. So the portfolio was rebalanced over a two-phase rebalance plan starting in May, ending in early June. So we've got the whole portfolio rebalanced to the new targets that you all approved. I've got an updated investment policy statement that I'm going to cover after performance today that shows those new targets in your investment policy statement. But that rebalance did take place, went very smoothly. Big thanks to Christina for all her help in some of those movements, because I there's a lot of paperwork that that she needs to sign off on in terms of getting those assets moved. So I wanted to make sure that she got a big thanks for all of her help with that. But what that's translated into, if you can see on that bottom schedule, investable assets, just a really great calendar year to date for us so far. Running through these numbers left to right, started the year off at about a little sub 37 million. We had net cash inflow of that 300,000 that you remember that was discussed at the previous meeting. So the 8,000 or so that's net out of that is just the fees being paid to the investment managers year to date so far. The gain loss has been very impressive, up about 3 million or so. So it's left us with a market value above 40 million, which is a pretty awesome milestone that I think we can all be proud of. And a return so far for just the calendar year to date. So this is just the 6 months, January to June, of 8.5%. And that is net of fees. So really strong performance to start the year out. I'm going to move a few pages farther forward here, and we can discuss this from kind of a composite level and rankings perspective. So at the top there, I think the most notable things are we have bested our benchmark over every single time period that's shown here. And we're ranking extremely well, particularly if you look over that trailing 1 year, huge numbers there, outperforming the target allocation index by about 450 basis points, as well as ranking in the top decile of all pension plan. Our universe here is all pension plans less than 100 million. So really, I can't stress how really great these numbers are, particularly this outperformance versus the target allocation index. And you might remind yourself, what is the target allocation index? The target allocation index is if we were going to implement our exact asset allocation, but solely passive. So we were going to try. So every manager, we take their passive benchmark, and that's what rolls up into that target allocation index in the respective weightings. And so if we're beating that benchmark, that means our active managers are adding value over their stated benchmark. And what, I think in any given year you can hope for. you know, 50 to 100 basis points of outperformance. The fact that we got 450 basis points of outperformance over the trailing year is phenomenal, and it shows in the rankings as well. You can see there the all pension plans median is 22% over the trailing year. So even if we had implemented just the benchmark passively, we would have outperformed the median allocation by about 250 basis points or so. But really, we outperformed it by much more than that, about, you know, 600 or 700 basis points because of the alpha earned from the investment managers. And that is ranking us extremely well versus peers. So I was very happy to kind of point that out to all of you. And as you'll see later in Milliman's presentation, that has translated into some really great additional health status, much healthier status for this plan than even just a couple years ago. So that's really translated into some great results from that perspective. I'm actually going to come back to this page, if you don't mind. I'm going to move a few pages forward just to talk about that ranks a little more. I think this is a great page to show just what we've been able to accomplish in the last 10 years. Let me explain this chart for you again, for whoever hasn't seen it yet. A little bit confusing here, but it really is just showing the different quartiles of that all pension plans, less than 100 million plans. It's ranking all of them. And then it's saying, where do we plot the diamonds are our total fund. And the blue, I'm colorblind, so it might not be blue. I apologize. But it is the circle there is our benchmark. And as you all, some of you who have been on this committee for a while, remember that, you know, we went through a time coming out of the great financial crisis where we weren't ranking very well and we were underperforming the benchmark. We've completely flipped that around. If you look at the right side of the page there. So now the plan, what this is showing is the total fund over, this is a trailing 5 year. Every one of these is a new 5 year dot that we put on every quarter. You can see there, this most recent 5 year dot plotting well into the top quartile, but more so is to what we mentioned earlier, is greatly outperforming even our passive benchmark, which is still ranking really well, still ranking above median. So those two things, our asset allocation decisions and our manager selection decisions, have added greatly to performance, particularly over the last 5 or 6 years. You can see that just gradually trending up with a couple dips in there with some bad quarters or so. But realistically, our five-year ranks now are extremely well versus peers. And I think this is a page right here that can just, if you had to summarize how well the committee has done in making decisions, this would be the page that you would want to use over the past 10 years in terms of decision making. So kudos to all of you, because it has certainly helped with our funded status. I'm going to go back to this page, which shows some of the subcomposites. This again is going to try to get us to understand how we got to where we are over the quarter, year to date, and 1 year trailing periods. I'll kind of focus on those. You know, this quarter was again another phenomenal quarter of about 5.7% net of fees, again beating the benchmark by about 40 basis points. So that's translated into that calendar year to date performance that you saw on the first page that I discussed in the schedule of investable assets, up about 8.6% over the benchmark by about 119 basis points. And obviously the trailing 1 year there, besting the benchmark net of fees of over 400 basis points. So really great performance post-recovery COVID. You know, that has to do with that rebalance that we all did in terms of that special meeting that we had kind of right when markets were getting crazy at the end of March. We had a quick meeting. We followed our policy. We rebalanced and we were able to make the portfolio whole again. In not too much time after a very dramatic sell-off, but we've also been doing it, in great terms when you look at the underlying pieces. So are different composites that make up that total fund. You can see the domestic equity portfolio is over its benchmark, basically over every trailing time period. Same with our international equity portfolio, over its benchmark over every single trailing time period. The fixed income book has done really well post-recovery, trailing a little bit on that three-year number, but again, that's kind of due to that one hiccup in March of last year when things really sold off. We trailed the benchmark slightly, which I would say almost every client did in their fixed income book, because unless you held solely treasuries there, you essentially underperformed during that March period. But we've made that back and then some over the trailing 1 year period over that kind of treasury heavy benchmark. So again, great outperformance there. You know, and continuing the trend, we saw great outperformance in our real return composite as well as in our GTAA composite over that trailing 1 year. So it's hard to get numbers like this. You know, it's not very often that you'll look at these reports and you'll see is so many places that are reflecting positive good news. And it's really hard to even really pinpoint anything that's going wrong in this portfolio right now. So just wanted to kind of point that out. Those are the kind of things that stick out to me when I look at these numbers all the time is how well we've been doing from not only an asset allocation perspective, which we can rank versus our peers, but our manager selection as well, and how well these excess returns or these differentials versus our passive benchmarks have been doing. I'll stop there real quick. I can jump into some manager performance as well, kind of the next underlying piece, but I know I just went over a lot of information, so just wanted to provide an opportunity to ask any questions if anybody had any.
Hey, Ian. I really enjoyed that chart with the trailing five-year performance and outperformance since, you know, 2013, 2014. You know, just that time frame highlights when the trustees really started getting involved in education and really kind of beefing up our smarts about the pension. You know, we made some modifications to the benefit then too, but that didn't really affect the performance. The performance has been all driven by your advice and trustee decision-making. And it's really good to see the plan come together. I think, you know, we should be proud of what we've done as a committee. And, you know, we've had some committee members here that will be leaving us soon. And I just want to thank them for their commitment to this this plan. And to be able to leave on such good news is just a feather in their cap, I think. They should be proud of the service that they put in. So thanks for highlighting that.
Yeah. Certainly. Thanks, Bill. Couldn't agree more. You know, that's just been an awesome collaborative effort here. And I was really excited to get to this meeting today because, you know, it's not often and you know, I don't want to sugarcoat it too much because there will be times when, you know, we'll go through dips and dives. You know, it's just part of the investing world, but over the past year or two, you know, this thing's really been rocking and rolling and hitting on all the cylinders. And you've got to take those good times when you can, because then, you know, I think that rebalance that we did at the last meeting, I think that's going to do a really good job in terms of adding a little bit more downside protection into this going forward, trying to help lock in some of these gains that we've made. So I'm really happy with the decision making that we've all been a part of. And yeah, kudos to everybody on this committee who's made some of those decisions along the way. Maybe I'll end with just maybe a couple high points in terms of managers. And maybe I'll hit on a couple of the places. There aren't that many, to be honest, that haven't really been holding their weight. You can see here, from a quarter to date, calendar year date, and 1 year perspective, pretty much all our equity managers. So, right, Fidelity is our passive allocation within the US equity portfolio. Dodge & Cox is our value manager. Arbor Caps, our growth manager. And then kind of the same thing in the international equity segment. We've kept it simple, but effective. You know, we've got a passive piece again in the international equity segment, a value active value component and an active growth perspective. And if you look at those trailing 1 year returns, first of all, just from an absolute perspective, they're all contributing somewhere between 40 and 60% net of fees return to the trust. Perfect, right? We really hit that recovery in every single place that we possibly could. And remember, this, like I said in the capital markets discussion, this rotated a bit. So it wasn't completely just led. If you would have looked at these numbers 6 months ago, Harbor Cap was way outperforming Dodge & Cox, because growth managers were way outperforming value managers. But value managers made a great comeback. Dodge & Cox in particular had a really good trailing one-year period. You can see there they beat their benchmark by 1,500 basis points and added a lot to the trust. But we also obviously are cognizant of fees, and that's why we've got those passive pieces in there as well to help control the fees and not completely go gung-ho on active management. Although, you know, some might argue that maybe we wish we would have been a little more in active management over this past time period, but we won't, you know, can't count too many of our chickens or so. There will be times like we have just come out of in the past 10 years where really passive management did much better than active management. But we saw in times of market volatility, that's where active management technically usually makes its comeback. And I was glad to see that all of our managers here over that rocky past 1 to 2 year timeframe have done really well in terms of adding value. So not much to kind of hit on in terms of negatives on the equity side. On the next page here, you can see that, you know, we've got our passive bond portfolio here, and we've got our active component in double line. Again, remember, they're up about 3 or 3.5% or so over the 1 year. And remember, I remember sitting in this meeting with you all a year ago, and double line had underperformed by about 600 basis points, if you recall, during that initial March sell-off. And you know, it was certainly an eye-popping cause for concern for a lot of clients. And I think what we felt at our firm is Double Line just has a great philosophy. We understood why they underperformed in a treasury run. They don't hold hardly any treasuries. We hold most of our treasuries in this portfolio up in this passive piece. But you know, I remember saying to you all, kind of watch out for Double Line, because going forward, if we hit a good recovery, they're going to be a bond manager that does really well over the next 1 to 2 years, just because that portfolio is yielding so much more than what the Barclays Ag is right now. So you can see that materialized quite nicely here, up about 360 or so basis points over the trailing 1 year over the treasury benchmark, which has essentially been flat this year. So really good there. We got some awesome outperformance from our diversified inflation strategies manager, PIMCO, and our GTA manager, PineBridge. Both of those up really well for diversified portfolios. Obviously, PIMCO getting great tailwinds from some of those big inflation numbers that we saw. You know, that's kind of our inflation hedge in the portfolio, if you will. So if we continue to see runaway inflation, which is a real risk. I don't think it's a high probability risk, but it is a risk to every portfolio out there. This is the piece of the portfolio that's going to help us in some kind of high inflationary environment. And then we've got our PineBridge, our GTA manager, which is really just our kind of go anywhere manager. That's just providing a more diversified look across all asset classes. Plus you got some things that really you can't access in a portfolio of our size. So they've got some underlying private sleeves that have some kind of unitized ways of accessing private equity and private credit and things like that, places that we can't really get as sole allocations in this portfolio due to our size and our liquidity constraints, but they can get it in a fund structure. So I really like what they've been able to do in terms of over the past trailing year, up about 28% or so. So again, tough to find some negatives here. I think we've really done over the calendar year today, quarter calendar year, some pretty great numbers there. I'll end on just kind of one more slide, if you will. you know, here's another peer page that I think is really, really good to look at. This is just showing quarter to date, calendar year to date, and then a bunch of calendar years. And you can see more often than not, we're toward the top. We've been toward the top of those peer rankings. Those are all the quartiles stacked on each time period. So you know, obviously where this portfolio is going to struggle a little more than peers is in kind of bigger down markets. And again, a little bit of that is it's tough to delineate how much contributes to this, but plans that have a lot of private equity or a lot of private real estate, those investments don't get marked to market very often in really big down markets. So it gives those clients kind of a false hope of it, that they're not down as much as they are. Well, those things usually get marked down. They just get marked down later. In a very liquid portfolio like ours, we're going to experience everything kind of in real time, if you will. So that's going to make us a little bit more volatile than some of the peers in this group, which is going to make us rank not quite as well in down markets and probably make us rank a little bit higher in up markets. But I think it's a truer picture of the portfolio at any given time. And you can kind of see that in the rankings there. I think that's probably it, Bill. I think that's probably a good synopsis. I don't want to monopolize the meeting. So are there any other questions from trustees before I go into one other item that I've got on the agenda today?
And I just wanted to thank you for that very positive report. And I wanted to also second Bill's sentiments of appreciation for the participants on this committee and the decisions that they made. And Ian, for your really good sage advice that's guided our decisions, I just wanted to thank you as well. So thanks.
I appreciate it, but it's all you guys are the ones that have to make the hard decisions. I just bring the recommendation. So kudos to all of you. I'm going to skip ahead. Sorry, we've got a number of pages here. Again, if I don't go through most of these in the back, but there's lots more information if you want to get into it. If you ever have any one-off questions, please don't hesitate to email me, and I will do the best I can to answer them as thoroughly as I possibly can. But you've got a lot of information in the back of those reports on specific managers, et cetera, that I think are really good to go through that we don't usually spend time in the committee meetings here, but are some great due diligence aspects of that report if you ever go through. So this last document is just, all it is memorializing the decisions that we made at last meeting. So you already approved the asset allocation change. This is just approving the policy to make sure it reflects those changes. So all this is, the only thing that changed in this document is this table right here, the allocation of assets. And this will match up to those new asset allocation target and ranges that you approved at the last meeting, as well as what's already been shown to you in this report that's already been rebalanced to and reflected of. So again, just from kind of a governance standpoint, this is more just a housekeeping item and making sure our policy is up to date. So I've provided a red line version here, as well as a clean version. I think it probably, Bill, would be, you already approved these changes, but would probably be prudent to approve the new policy as well. But that's what's reflected in these two documents. The second one I'm showing you being the clean version.
Yeah, thank you, Ian. I do believe we should have a motion to adopt and approve the updated changes to our investment policy. So with that, I'll entertain a motion to do so.
I move to approve the changes on the.
Okay, AJ makes a motion to approve the document. Do I have a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. John Hampton. Any discussion on that? Seeing none. All those in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. Passes unanimously. Thank you, Ian, for getting that housekeeping done. It's one of those things that you always don't think about, you know, you're making the choices, you're making the decisions, but keeping up on the paperwork is always very important for posterity. So thank you for doing that for us, and whoever comes after us will appreciate it too.
Well, thank you all very much. I appreciate the time.
All right. Well, if there's no other questions for Ian, we can move on to the report of the actuary, and we have Lacey here representing Milliman. Welcome, Lacey. And you have a report for us.
I do. I'll note that Scott is taking a well-deserved out of office day today. So I'll take us through our brief presentation. Can someone give me a thumbs up that you can hear me and see my slides? Excellent.
Everything looks good.
All right, here we go then. So for the ATU plan, we are on a biennial cycle for the valuations, which means we complete one every 2 years. The most recent one was completed as of January of 2020. And we'll start that process again in January of 2022, which we will use to set the contribution rates for the fiscal years that end in 2023 and 2024. We did recently complete some accounting work for the district's finance team that doesn't really have to do with the trustees, but it does give us some more information that we can use to look at the plan's funded status between valuations. This is hopefully a familiar slide to everyone. You've seen something like this many times before. This is just historical results for the last few valuations, as well as those in-between measurements from the accounting work. So we have here a slightly updated funded status for the beginning of 2021. I think when we went through this presentation in our February meeting, we showed a 76% funded percentage for the ATU plan. And after reflecting final assets, that number has come up slightly to 78%. So a little bit of good news there. And like Ian talked about, the last few years, the assets have returned much higher than we've expected. So that's the primary contribution to increasing from that low of 65% all the way up to the high of 78% at the moment. When we complete the 2022 valuation, that will again reflect the rest of the asset returns for 2021. And that will also reflect any changes in the plan population. So changes in actives, new retirements, terminations, all of those things that have happened in the last 2 years. So the liability, the actuarial liability that we're showing here for 2021 is still based on the valuation from 18 months ago. So that's an estimate, and that's the number that we will be reevaluating and truing up effectively when we complete the 2022 valuation. The other thing I'll point out here is that we're using a market value of assets with no smoothing, which is slightly different from when we do the valuation, which includes smoothing the assets to even out highs and lows effectively to make sure there aren't as big of a jump in contributions when you see either high or low returns or big changes in the population. So that's one other difference between what you see here and what you might see in our funding valuation. That's really it that we have for today, since we're in the middle of the process, or in a downtime effectively in the process. I'm happy to take any questions from the group. That's all I have.
Well, that's continuing the good news there, Lacey. Appreciate seeing a slight bump up in that funded status. You know, that's something that we live and die by, is the funded status of the plan. And, you know, we feel good when it's going up and we feel bad when it's going down. So that's good to hear. Any other questions for Lacey from any of the other trustees?
No.
All right. Seeing none, we can move on to a report of the attorney.
I still have nothing for this meeting.
Thank you, Jeff. I will just maybe pose a question or maybe a statement out there about the work on the plan loans and adding the Roth 457 contributions. I know the 457 is kind of outside of our purview as trustees, but the 401A parts of the plan, you know, we still were seeking to do some work there. And you had said you may be able to update the document outside of working with VALIC. I think that might be an easier solution. So I do think our work group has some changes in composition, but I think we'll be getting back to you about moving forward on some of that stuff.
That sounds fine.
Great. So any other questions for Jeff outside of that? Seeing none, we're ticking the boxes here. We'll move on to the report of the administrator.
Good morning, all. Nothing out of the ordinary with expenses. Cash flow looks good at this time. We're not going to ask for any recommended transfers. We're holding steady there. The expenses and retirees since last meeting were emailed to you this morning. Apologies for that late email. And there's really nothing out of the ordinary. Everything's going through bill.com. We are going to need to talk about who we want to have on bill.com after AJ, instead of AJ or instead of Steven, or what's going on with all that. So that may be something that we want to discuss of who exactly we want to do all those expenses. So, other than that, I'm open for any questions.
How's the process working now with Lane Transit, HR, and communicating with Curtis Stokes? Are things pretty smooth and open communication for processing retirements?
Yes, we're getting there.
Okay.
You know, I'm trying to be as open with them as possible. Any questions they have, I'm asking them to come to me. I'm trying to keep up with, I have a specific folder that I put everything in when it comes through. And then when I send it back, I put a date on that folder. So I keep up with when I've sent it to them. I'm trying to, you know, hey, I haven't seen this one yet. I actually do have to return a call to somebody who has kind of fallen through the cracks. And they actually are going to be getting this next payment, but they have kind of waited a little bit long. And that was on the LTD side. It kind of fell somewhere and they didn't get it back to me after it was signed. So it hasn't been really a hassle at all. They've been very good about communicating and asking questions and seems to be going pretty well.
I know we're building a new team here and I just want to make sure that we're having good communication. So it sounds like at least that's happening. And, you know, we're all working towards the same goal of processing these things on the benefit of the retirees. So
yeah, absolutely. And if you talk to them, you just let them know, hey, just call Sarah. She'll try and answer it. And if I can't, then I'll send you on to Jeff.
Well, good. That's good to hear. And hopefully it continues to get even smoother as we strengthen our team here.
Absolutely.
Okay. Any other questions for Sarah? Seeing none. Move on to new and unfinished business. So unfinished business, we, couple things, right now we had a scheduled training in October for the International Foundation of Employee Benefit Plans. It was scheduled to be in Denver, Colorado. We had prepaid for that conference back in 2019. It's been carried. It got canceled in 2020. They're still going forward with the conference in Denver, but, they recently made it pretty easy to switch over to a virtual conference. And given the spread of Delta and everything going on out there, I know converting to a virtual conference is definitely something I am interested in doing. So I will be switching over to the virtual option. That means no hotel spend will come the plan's way. That'll save us money there. One trailing item from the registrations from 2019 is that Mr. John Hampton will be transitioning off of the plan and Mr. John Gangle will be transitioning onto the plan as a trustee. And we'll need to find a way to transfer that registration as well with the IFEBP. Just some housekeeping stuff to do. It's really disappointing. I always enjoy the conferences in person. but it really does not seem to be the correct path forward to attend it in person, unfortunately. Maybe next year, but we'll still get our education in for this year. And, you know, I think, you know, with Mr. John Gangle coming on, kind of a virtual conference, attending the meetings, we'll get him in to a few sessions here before next year's hopefully in-person conference, that we can get him started for the CAP program or some more of the intensive things. So I did want to bring up that issue and transition to a virtual. And I would invite anybody from the administrative side of the trustees, if they wanted to do the virtual thing, we can always kind of coordinate our schedules so we can have discussions about the classes we have attended. And if we're bringing on new trustees, that might be a good way to kind of slowly introduce them into the world of pensions. Other unfinished business, we always have we had a standing item for a 3% COLA. It's not showing here, it was a standing item. It's something we've always had great discussion on. You know, these meetings have always been pretty entertaining, especially when Mr. John Hunt was a trustee here. That was always great. We had a work group working on a COLA plan that involved our actuaries, and we've gone through a couple, and Lacey's help as well. We had a former director of human resources on it as well. Well, we got some new players in. We're going to get some new trustees in. It's really time that we get a recap of where we're at and where we're going on this group. Last report we had was our retirees have lost 20% of their buying power since our last COLA, which was in 2006. So that's been a long, long time. And as we're starting to see the inflation numbers, the CPI numbers, like Ian referred to, 5%, there's some talk out there that the COLA for Social Security next year might be over 6%. Our retirees, one of the things we do as trustees is that we have to look out for the retirees. We have to manage the plan for the best interest of the retirees. And part of that is making sure that they can still afford to live when they're retired. Don't want to disrupt the meeting here, but I think it might be prudent that our trust, as we seat new trustees, I know LTD's administrative trustees will get some new faces, and we'll have some new faces here on the union side as well, that we have a focused pension trust meeting on the COLA. Maybe Lacey can put together a presentation where we ended up with our group discussions. A lot of things were out there. We had a lot of crazy ideas on how to get that done. Sometimes you think about it a little too much, but we need to recap and find a path forward, because we've been talking about this for 4 years since the signing of the last collective bargaining agreement, and we don't have anything to show for it. And I think that's very disappointing. So I would ask if we could have Milliman and our trustees meet, maybe with Jeff as well, to discuss the COLA for our retirees. It's been going on for so long, and, you know, we need to start moving this ball down the road. Going 15 years without giving a COLA to retirees is probably unacceptable. I feel bad for them, and we need to do better. So I myself will personally put out a motion to have a special trust meeting focused on a retiree COLA.
Bill, I want to second that, but I just want to ask, could it be, instead just a meeting, maybe really considered a workshop, maybe an additional meeting? As you noted, you know, I will be coming off of this trustee, this pension trust as a trustee. Mark Johnson will replace me. And we also expect the board president to make an appointment at the September meeting. So although we don't have to firm up a date, you know, if your motion could maybe include that it's actually a workshop, that I believe, you know, the attorney needs to be present. Christina, any staff that you have, but I do think this is a conversation that all trustees probably need to come to the table.
And one of the things that as I leave this pension trust, we talked about a COLA, we've agreed, we disagreed, but we've never gotten down into the weeds of how to do it. And I think that's always the concern is let's just do it, or no, it might be too much work to do it, or we don't know how to do it. I think if this new trustees that are coming on board on the ATU side and the admin side could really look at the financials, especially I think, as you stated earlier, that, you know, how does the same dollars 10 years ago, 20 years ago compared to today, how are new retirees going to fare differently, or how are old retirees faring on their pension? So I think we really want to maybe recommend that it's a workshop in which they information comes, and maybe that would be the way to handle it, because I do think it's a desire by all that we fulfill our fiduciary duty to ensure that we're taking care of the fund, but we're also taking care of the retirees that we've been, you know, we shoulder in our decision making. So if it's like kind of a workshop, I would second your motion.
Okay, I can clarify maybe what I'm asking for. I want, after our new trustees are seated, to have a meeting, we can call it a workshop, where Milliman can give us an overview of what we've discussed in the last 4 years, all the new trustees and our new, what I'm assuming would be administrator from the director of HR, Alex, and he can be brought up to speed as well. And we can really forge that path forward. So I think that would be great. We'll wait for new trustees to get seated and then we'll check schedules. But this is something that we all need to bring top of mind and really know what we've done and what we can do. So so the motion would be to have a workshop on a COLA, recapping the past 4 years and a path forward after all new trustees are seated.
Bill, I have a quick question. How does this relate to the collective bargaining agreement that you referred to? I mean, how is this separate from that discussion, or how does that work?
Yeah, so what that work group, you know, obviously we've had some changes in that work group, Christina, and we're way overdue on our recommendations from the collective bargaining agreement. You know, yearly, the pension trust calls us to come to a discussion on COLAs for retirees. And I think this would satisfy that part of the trust document. If we can come together and talk about the COLAs for the retirees, the work that's been done by the work group in the last 4 years, and maybe with fresh ideas and fresh eyes, we can really find that path forward. So I don't really think it conflicts with what the CBA has asked us to do. It just really brings the group up to speed of where we're at, where we're failing, where we can push forward.
And I will second your motion, Bill.
Thank you, AJ. Any more discussion on that motion? All right, seeing no more discussion, can I call for a vote? All those in favor, aye.
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 I got three ayes. All those not in favor? Aye. No, four. I got four ayes, so that's a unanimous decision. Thank you, guys. I really appreciate it. I think, you know, we have a real opportunity with some fresh ideas. We'll get some education in the meantime. People will come to the table with open minds and open hearts, and hopefully we can find how to treat our retirees with respect out there. We've been doing a good job in this fund, like we've heard today. We heard it from Milliman. We heard it from RVK. You know, we need to translate what that good job means for our retirees. So that's my unfinished business. I don't have any new business personally, but I will open up to the floor for new business.
Bill, I do not have any new business, but I definitely do want to say that Today is my last pension trust meeting. Mark Johnson will replace me, and as I stated, the board president will appoint a board member as another trustee. It has been a pleasure being on this pension trust. I not only knowing that we're looking after our retirees, making the decisions, the support we've had from everybody at the virtual table has been amazing. This is a responsibility that LTD takes very seriously. Each trustee, we take it very seriously. So I really have enjoyed my time here. And the relationship that we forged with ATU, I think it's, we will miss John Hampton's animated, Carl Faddis. We have some great people at the table. We've had Gary Gillespie, Stephen Yetch. Everybody really brings their best to this. I think we all take this very seriously. I know we probably haven't moved forward, but the decision about, I believe there was a committee, subcommittee working on how our retirees or existing employees can maybe borrow against their pension. There's a lot of decisions that we've made here that I'm very proud of, the relationship we've all had in moving forward. We're dealing with good times right now, and it's exciting to have a few of these meetings not be so depressing, but I do know that we're always looking at conservatively what happens during that time. So I would encourage you all to continue to support the health of the pension trust and keep your eye out for our retirees who definitely have given us many years of service, and we owe a lot of what we have today to their great work. So thank you all for your time, and I look forward to kind of continuing the relationship, but just in a different format. So thank you all for all you do.
Thank you.
Thanks, AJ. That was well said. And yes, a lot of people have had their hand in making this a success. And I always think forums like the Pension Trust or our Joint Insurance Committee, areas where ATU and Lane Transit sit at the same table and have equal sharing of power and how we best serve our employees definitely strengthens our relationship when it comes to every other aspect of the work we do. So these are great forums to help us with that. Anybody else have any new business? All right. Well, seeing none, we get our annual calendar fight going here, but we have a lot of new people and we don't know what their calendars are going to be. And we're going to get news of who they may be. We know Mark Johnson more than likely will be taking over AJ, as she referred to, and we're going to get a new board member on the committee. And, you know, I'm going to get a new ATU person as well. So we don't have everybody's calendar, but I think it might be best to try to pick a date just because we have so many folks to try to coordinate here. I know typically we try to do it a few weeks after the quarter closes. So I'll defer to Ian with his best recommendation of a time.
Yeah, I was just going to, so I think normally we do it about, you know, six or so weeks after the quarter end. So that would really normally put us in, you know, mid-November. I know that's always, we always kind of have to try to balance the Thanksgiving holiday. So I think that would kind of normally put us in the probably November 8th to November 19th range, Bill. Yeah, sometime around there should be when all reporting's done on our side, everything's good. I don't know if Lacey and Jeff have any other materials that would potentially necessitate a certain date, but on my end, that's usually when things are, where we usually hold the meetings.
Okay, well, the week of November 8th, I mean, I definitely want to try to avoid anything closer to the Thanksgiving holiday. So the week of November 8th, Tuesday through Thursday. Anybody got any objections to, we typically had done them on Wednesdays. We typically had done them at 11. This was quite early. We can get our agendas updated for times, but anybody have any objections to Wednesday, November 10th at 11? I see Mr. John Gangle with his hand up. John.
Yeah, I am actually on vacation that week, but it's going to be a staycation as long as that's fine. I guess I really don't have any objection to that.
Okay.
And I'll defer to Mark Johnson. I think he's on, if he can check his calendar.
Yeah, Mark, if you since we know you're coming, you definitely get a chance to give input.
Yeah, I think November for that week is fine.
Okay. That was tough to hear, but I'm just going to say you said it was all okay that week, Wednesday at 11. I don't usually get to make your schedules, but I'm going to make this one.
And Bill, that worked for me.
Okay, thank you, Christina. Okay, so let's just call it November 10th at 11 a.m. And we'll meet however we can meet. Let's say it's going to be Zoom.
Yeah, can I just clarify? This is for the next regularly scheduled meeting. Is that correct? Not for the additional meeting that you were referring to earlier?
Yep, this is the regular scheduled trust meeting. We'll do the workshop meeting after we get our other seated trustees on board, because that will be critical.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Thank you, Camille. Well, all right. Well, with that, I will close the ATU LTD Pension Trust meeting. I will leave you to your business of the next pension trust meeting. I thank all the professionals that were here today for your time and service. Thank you, AJ, for your service to the LTD ATU Pension Trust here. We definitely enjoyed our conversations around the table, and I do believe we have made great progress while you've been a trustee, and you were a critical component of ensuring that happened. You're leaving a good team with Mark and Christina, and we're excited to see who the board member is. And with that, I'm done. So I bid you adieu.
And I thank everybody for the last few years of getting me up to speed and what was going on, and the education I got, and the camaraderie has been great.
Thank you, John. We will be seeing you around, I'm sure, as an audience member.
Oh, yeah.
Bye, everyone.
Goodbye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you, John. Thank you, Bill.
And we still have one more meeting, just making sure Camille knows.
Got it. Thank you very much, AJ.
All right. Thank you, everyone, for staying on. This is the call to order of our Pension Trust Committee meeting for the Salaried Employees Retirement Plan. And I note that there are a couple things. One is a correction for next time on the agenda time, although it is correctly reflected on the schedule on our external website. And we want to do a roll call of attendees. So I'm here, Christina.
Here for AJ.
Thank you, AJ. So we have a quorum and we can move forward. I know we have one open position that will be filled by the board in the future for the board position of Mr. Stephen Yett. And so I don't have any announcements or additions to the agenda other than the change of Stephen Yett to be replaced by a different board member. I know that AJ might have an announcement on her change as well and replacement.
Christina, for the purpose of the minutes, I do want to state that this is my last meeting as a trustee here, and I will be replaced by Mark Johnson. And so he will be part of the next meeting, and that administrative process is in place to ensure that happens seamlessly.
Thank you so much, AJ. And I believe at the last meeting, it was mentioned by Carol that she would like to speak during the public comment period. And so, Camille, will you please provide the information on providing audience participation?
Yes, before I do that, I just, for the audio record, since this is a virtual meeting, I would like to note for the record that we also have Jeff Pertner, Lacey Engel, Sarah Hodges, Ian Bray, and Dean Huber present at the meeting. And we have no change in our public attendance, so I'm going to skip reading the instructions again. And we have Carol James wishing to provide testimony again. Carol, give me one moment to get the timer up. And Carol, go ahead whenever you're ready.
Okay, my name is Carol James, and I'm president of Springfield. I'm an I'm an admin pension trust retiree. I guess one, I'd like the minutes to be changed to recognize that I was online for the last meeting and I did have my hand raised, but I was not recognized for public comment. What I would like to say, or what I'd like to say from the last meeting, is first of all, the minutes meetings are posted in the agenda to start at 12. This meeting started at 10:08. I think that's inappropriate if you're having a public meeting. If public testimony is actually, if the public is actually invited, you should be having a meeting posted at the time of the meeting started. So if we want to put on your agenda that it will complete, that it'll start as soon as the ATU meeting is completed, that would be better information. I would also like the minutes to start reflecting more information about what was actually discussed in the ATU meeting with regard to the investments or actuary information that's just summarized in the minutes for the admin meeting since the discussion was held in the ATU meeting. This isn't very good information for the admin plan and makes you have to go to the ATU minutes to read what was discussed if you're actually looking for information about the admin plan. I think this is inappropriate. Those are my comments. And I think that otherwise, obviously the plan's doing fine and just keep my checks coming. Thank you.
Thank you, Carol. So I just wanted to note that for the record that the meeting was correctly posted on the events calendar, and it is just incorrectly reflected in the actual agenda document. But on the events calendar on LTD's website, it is correctly reflected. We can add that the salary plan pension trust meeting will follow the meeting of the ATU pension trust meeting in the future. And next we will, all of the minutes of the meeting are recorded as well as provided in the written form summary. So the next item for this meeting is approval of the meeting minutes. Does anybody have any updates or changes to the meeting minutes?
Christina, I did not see any, so hopefully I didn't miss anything, but if you don't have anything, I will move approval of the minutes.
And I will second. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Thank you. The motion passes. So the next item for this meeting is the report of the investment consultant, which is Ian. And he provided an extensive report on the plan in the last meeting. Ian, do you want to provide a report on things that are for this specific to the salary plan or additional information per Carol's comment about having more extensive information on the salary plan?
Yeah, sure. I think that I'll cover a few items here. I will defer to the trustees at the level of comments. I think that one thing to note is if you remember at the previous meeting, we have now in this plan de-risked this plan a bit. So it will have a different, not terribly different, but slightly different asset allocation than the ATU plan, where previously they had similar asset allocations. So it might be good for us to start discussing the performance here at a high level. Again, a lot of the comments will translate over. The only difference at this point in time is a slight change in difference in the asset allocation between the two plans. So while I think that while the trustees here overlap, obviously, with the ATU plan, I will defer to you, Christina and AJ, on if you would like me to cover market activity again. But I think plan specific performance would be good to start covering in this meeting, just because of that slight deviation in the asset allocation going forward.
Thank you, Ian. I agree that the plan-specific things would be most appreciated. Thank you.
Perfect. Well, we'll start off this meeting then by jumping right into that. So I maybe will keep comments, at a high level here. I won't, Christina, AJ, I'll look to you to how much detail the trustees would like in terms of things like manager performance, because at this point, the manager overlap between the two plans is the same, the only difference being the asset allocation. So I think for at least the time being, talking about total fund performance is probably the most relevant to this committee. So maybe I'll start there. But if in the future we have any manager differentials between the two plans, then it might make sense to introduce some manager commentary. But at this point, I think the composites themselves are still going to remain similar between the ATU plan and here, but the total fund performance is going to deviate slightly because of those target differentials between the two plans. So I'll focus my comments there. So on page 12 here, again, similar asset allocation as the ATU plan for most of this reported period. If you remember at the last meeting, we approved these targets that are listed in the upper right-hand box on page 12 on your screen. So again, we rebalanced slightly from domestic equity into real return. So 3% from one to the other. That is reflected in the new asset allocation shown on your screen. Similar calendar year-to-date return as the ATU plan, but about 3 basis points difference, just based on that, about one of those 3 months having a slightly different asset allocation, June being the time period as the plan was rebalanced in two phases between May and the beginning of June. So now we do reflect the targets that are seen in the upper right-hand corner. Again, I direct your attention to the bottom table, the schedule of investable assets. Again, we started out the year at 23.3 million about. We had, if you recall, that net cash outflow in this plan to the checking account of $100,000. So that is reflected in that net cash outflow, that negative net cash flow is reflecting that $100,000 transfer to the checking to pay benefits, as well as the 5,000 dollars about that has been paid in investment management fees. The gain loss for this plan for the year-to-date period, again, that's January through the end of June, has been really great, just sub $2 million. So that leaves us with an ending market value of a little bit north of $25 million and a return of 8.54%. So again, great news in this plan in terms of plan performance. I'm going to move a few pages forward to page 16. So we've got the same peer group here as the ATU plan, all pension plans less than $100 million. And the same themes still apply to the ATU plan. In this plan, we've got a great quarter to date, calendar year to date, and 1 year period returns, as well as really great trailing returns all the way back to the 10-year period. All returns ranking above median in most time periods, essentially in the top quartile. Over that trailing 1 year period, you'll note that we rank in the eighth percentile. So again, one being the best plan in the peer group, 100 being the worst. So eight is fantastic, and outperforming our target allocation index by about 440 basis points. Again, that came from great asset allocation decisions, as well as manager selection. And we've had really great excess returns across all composites, as you can see on this page, over those trailing time periods with respect to their passive benchmarks. So we're outperforming at the total public equity segment, domestic equity, international equity, all three of those. And again, domestic equity and international equity, roll up to that total equity. Those two make up total equity. But if you were to delineate between domestic equity and international equity over the 1 year and in both segments, we saw returns somewhere between 40 and 47%, besting their passive benchmarks by about 280 basis points for domestic equity and 400 basis points or so for international equity. So some really great outperformance there. We saw similar trends in fixed income, real return, and GTAA as listed on page 17 here. So again, some trailing calendar year to date and 1 year comments, again, outperforming the benchmark handedly over all these time periods, particularly that 1 year trailing period. There about 600 or so basis points for real return in GTA and about 300 basis points, a little sub 300 basis points for fixed income. Really great performance across the board. I will again note the trend on page 26. And again, Lacey will provide you with a great update on the funded status or the estimated funded status of the plan, but that has greatly improved over the last few years. A lot of that attributable to some of these returns that we've been seeing coming in the last few years, well above your discount rate or your assumed return, investment return assumption. And again, we've seen this great trend of upward ranking versus peers. Here at the right side of the page being the most recent five-year dot in the diamond representing your total fund and the circle representing your passive benchmark. So again, two great things to note here. One, we want to see the total fund as high as possible on this page to the right. And two, we love to see this gap be huge between the total fund and your target allocation index. The height of your total fund dot, meaning how well you're ranking against peers, the gap here between these two, as long as it's positive, as long as the diamond's above the circle, meaning that we're providing great outperformance relative our policy benchmark. So that's really attributed to those to that underlying manager specific performance. So again, really great trends here to note, both on the 5 and the 10 year trend on page 27. And again, that is attributable over these time periods to great asset allocation decisions by the committee, as well as great manager selection And both of those have contributed to these great rankings. So I do think, Christina, that is probably a good overview of how the total fund is doing. But I will defer to you and AJ if you would like any additional comments on manager performance and or underlying composites, anything of that nature.
Yeah, this was a good summary for me. And I appreciate, you know, the differences that you pointed out in terms of the return, as well as, you know, the fund performance. AJ, I don't know if you had anything else you would like to hear about on this plan.
Christina, I actually don't have anything in addition that I need to hear, but I do want to say, just keeping in mind the public comment we received, I believe if the minutes could reflect the additional information from the ATU plan, so maybe just a copy and a paste. I don't know if anybody kind of has any questions about that, Christina. In other words, the summary that's in the ATU plan that is relevant to this plan as well, if we can make sure that's copied and pasted into the minutes, just indicating that this information was covered, but it's also held in the minutes specific to the admin plan. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's a great suggestion, AJ. Is that possible, Sarah, to do that for the minutes?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think we can do that. I think we can sort of scan them, you know, to the extent we've got the same money manager in both plans, and Ian talks about a money manager that's in the minutes. We'll make sure it's in both sets of minutes. To the extent he spends a little bit of time just talking about capital markets at the beginning of the ATU presentation, we can make sure that information, to the extent it's reflected in the minutes, is also in the salary minutes.
Yeah, and I was going to say, Christina, that Sarah provides me an opportunity to review the minutes on my side, on my comments. So going forward, Sarah and I will work to make sure that the market commentary, as well as the manager-specific information from ATU minutes, are also reflected in this minute and these minutes. But I'll make sure the total fund comments for this plan are specific to this plan. I think that probably strikes a good balance in terms of making sure the minutes of are reflective of the total conversation that we have, but also being mindful of the efficiency of this meeting, not to necessarily repeat all of the similar information that transcends between the two plans.
Thank you, everybody. And AJ, that's an excellent suggestion. I appreciate that. And that should address the concern that Carol had, and reminding me also that she mentioned one other thing. And so for the record about not being recognized, I want to make a comment that actually she was not recognized because she wasn't raising her hand during the public comment period. So that is where we have an opportunity for public comment. And we did not have her raising her hand during the public comment period, which is the opportunity for public comment. So it was towards the end of the meeting, which was not during public comment. And so I'm glad that she had an opportunity to speak at both this meeting as well as the ATU meeting to give us her feedback on the things that she wanted to see changed and that we're actually taking action on. So thank you.
Perfect. And Christina, I do have one additional item, and that is, again, kind of the housekeeping item, starting on, again, I apologize, I'm only seeing the page numbers on my screen in the packet that reflect the actual document, but it is the updated investment policy statement, and again, the only thing that is changing within this document is the reflection on page 9 in this redline version of the new targets and ranges that were approved and rebalanced to at the last meeting. So this document here is the redline version. The document that follows it is the clean version. So I would probably recommend that the trustees approve this new policy as the most updated policy reflecting the investments in the plan.
Sounds good. AJ, do you want to make a motion?
Yes, I move approval of the updated policy as presented.
And I'll second. I'm in favor. Aye. Anybody else in favor? Awesome. The motion passes.
Thank you, Christina. That concludes my remarks.
Thank you so much, Ian. I appreciate that very much. Your excellent report. And we will move on to the report of the actuary.
All right, let me share my screen again.
Thank you, Lacey.
Okay, can someone confirm you can see my slides?
Yes, we can see it. Thank you.
Excellent. Okay, I guess same population in our meeting as this morning or earlier this morning. So Scott obviously is not here. So I'll be taking us through a very brief presentation with an update of where we are in the cycle of the actuarial valuation. Timing is a little bit different on the salaried plan than the ATU plan. So we actually just kicked off a new actuarial valuation that will provide the funded status as of the beginning of the plan year we're in. So as of July 1 of 2021, that will give us our contribution rates for the fiscal years ending in 2023 and 2024. And so part of that process involves collecting data. I know Sarah's been very busy already providing us with lots of information about the assets, and the district will be providing us with information about the plan population as it stands currently. So we'll be using that information in the valuation and also to provide benefit statements to the active plan participants. One other item on our to-do list, similar to the ATU plan, is annual accounting information for the district's finance team, which is the basis for the funded status that we're going to talk about next. So again, a very similar slide here with some historical funded status information. Most of these numbers you've seen before. The July 1, 2021 number is obviously new, and it is an estimate. This is a number, these numbers we will finalize when we do the full valuation. So you can expect the actuarial liability number to change somewhat from the 30.6 million that we have here. We won't know whether that will go up or down or how that will change until we have received all of the data and have processed it and run the valuation. But the market value of assets that we have here is a final number. So that one will not be changing when we publish our report. As you can see, and reflecting a lot of what Ian just talked about, the funded status has dramatically increased in the last year, and that is exactly due to what Ian talked about with the asset returns much higher than we expected for the last plan year. So that brings us up to an estimated 84% funded as of July 1 of 2021. We will, again, this number is going to change when we finish the valuation for this year. And that will just reflect the actual experience on the liability side. We've already reflected the experience on the assets, but that will reflect, again, there's no new members coming into the plan, but retirements, terminations, everything else that's happened within the plan population in the last 2 years since the 2019 valuation. So that's all I have for today. I'm happy to take any questions from the group, but that's the short and sweet update of where we are right now.
Thank you, Lacey. AJ, do you have any questions?
I have none. Thank you.
Lacey, I have one quick question.
Sure.
This funded percentage, are you expecting, you said the liability side, are you expecting the funded percentage to change up or down as a result of that?
We won't know. The 30.6 million is an estimate, but again, that's based on data that is 2 years old. So once we have the current plan data, we will update that. It could go up, it could go down. We don't expect it to change dramatically, but it could be different. I would expect that by the November meeting, we would have preliminary evaluation results that should give us plenty of time to process the data and run the valuation. So at that point, we can talk about any suggested assumption changes. For example, since the asset allocation has changed, we'll mm-hmm. want to reflect that, any suggested changes to mortality assumptions, all of those, you know, common things that we talk about every 2 years, we'll go through that process again in November.
Okay. But this, this good news does keep us on track for fully funded status, right? As yes. planned within 10 years.
Yes, okay. Absolutely.
Thank you.
Ask Lacey a quick question too.
Sure.
Lacey, back in July of 18, when we used the 6.25 discount rate compared mm-hmm. to 5.5 we're using now, we did that to kind of de-risk the plan. If we were still using the 6.25, the funded percentage would be even better. Is that a true statement? Or
that is correct. So okay. you can think of a teeter-totter almost when you increase, or I guess let's put it this way, when you decrease the assumed rate of return, that increases the assets because you're not expecting as high a return. A significant part of that decrease that you can see from the 69 to the 67% from 2018 to 2019, that has to do with changing the discount rate as well as other factors that went into those measurements. At the moment, I can't speak to whether 5.5 is still appropriate, but that's something that we will look into and discuss at the November meeting.
Okay. I was just thinking from the standpoint of moving from 69% to 84% looks good, and it would look even better had we not changed our.
Right. That's absolutely correct. That big improvement really is based on the asset return over the last year.
Thanks.
Thanks for that question, Dean. Yeah, I was wondering actually, based on the fact that we changed our asset allocation, whether we were going to have to reduce our discount rate, also given some of the things Ian has told us about sort of the uncertainties on the future. So I was actually thinking a different way than you, Dean, but I think that's interesting.
It is possible that we might suggest a lower discount rate, although having dropped 75 basis points with the last valuation, I think that puts us in a more comfortable position going forward, but we will take a look at the new asset allocation and what our expectations are over the future of the plan. One difference to keep in mind when you're comparing the ATU plan and the salaried plan, the ATU plan is an open plan. New members are coming in. And so when we project out benefit payments, that's a much longer time horizon. The salaried plan has been closed for many years now and is a shrinking population. So as that population declines, as we expect it to, that shortens the time horizon for those asset returns. And so that can start to have a difference in what we're expecting to receive over the life of the plan.
Makes sense. Thank you, Lacey.
The one thing I'd add too is just recall that, you know, your discount rate is, if you're lowering it, is just a more conservative way of looking at the liabilities, to Lacey's point. So, you know, it's an accounting differential between like the 6.25 you saw in 2018 and the 5.5 that we're assuming now. But, you know, it doesn't change the liability stream, right? The liability stream is what it is. It's just a more conservative way of pricing it today versus the assets. So I think that this committee has been very prudent in trying to look at the liability stream in the most accurate way it potentially can. And so with all that being said, with decreasing from 6.25 to 5.5 and still us getting from, you know, in the 60s to 84, like that's just a phenomenal trend that we've seen in this plan over the last few years.
I completely agree with what Ian said. I think we're in a great position, and really the discount rate, you can think of that as changing the timing of contributions. They would have to be made eventually to make sure that all benefit payments can be paid. But by lowering that discount rate and making sure we're contributing to the plan now, we're hoping to ensure that we don't end up in a shortfall position later in the life of the plan.
Absolutely. That's so important. Thank you so much, all of you.
Thanks, Christina.
All right. So the next is administrator's report from Sarah.
And again, I've got no expenses that were out of the ordinary. Everything is pretty typical. And no retirees that have retired since the last meeting, but we are expecting some.
Thank you, Sarah. So is there any other new or unfinished business that people wanted to address in this meeting?
None for me, Christina.
Okay. So our last meeting, we set a time of November 10th, starting the meeting at 11. And that's for the ATU Pension Trust meeting. And then this meeting follows directly after that meeting as always. So we will stick with that time for this pension trust meeting for the salary plan. And I also would like to conclude just with really thanking AJ for all of her hard work on this committee, and she's contributed so much to the agency as well as to this committee to make, and I love that we're ending on such a strong basis, and I'm really going to miss her. And so, and I also welcome Mark to our team on the pension committee. So thank you so much, AJ.
Thank you, AJ. Thank you all for your service. I have a lot of trust in all of your collective ability, so thank you.
If there's nothing else, I will adjourn our meeting of the Salaried Pension Trust Committee. Thank you so much, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Christina.
Bye, everyone.